All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its hosts are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I am your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from New York City on this, the 29th day of January, 2019. Also, like to always remind you that I'm the author of a newsletter called Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, and the focus is largely on the junior mining sector, and I'm getting quite excited now, actually. I think finally we're going to make some money this year on the junior sector, and we could do very well. Usually when gold is hot and gold shares are hot, they're very hot, and when they're cold, they're very, very cold. And we've had a couple of years of quite a lot of cold, so I'm looking forward to what seems to be a turning point for the gold sector. We'll also like to remind you that Chen Lin's letter, what is Chen buying, what is Chen selling? ChenPicks.com is the place to go for that. ChenPicks.com has an excellent track record, especially in the biotech sector. And Michael Oliver as well. We'd like to remind you of Michael Oliver's great work, and he'll be talking to us in just a moment. OliverMSA.com, OliverMSA.com. Thank each of you for listening to this show, and would urge you to, or encourage you, if not urge you, to send along your comments, criticisms, praises, comments of any kind to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com, questions, the number for taylor@gmail.com. We do want to thank our sponsors for making this show economically viable. Our sponsors for today's show, RN Resources, Novo Resources, Triumph Gold, Gold Mining Inc., and Uranium Energy. The title for today's show is How True Gold Price Discovery is Denied Citizens and Why. Chris Powell, Michael Oliver, and Amir Adnani are the guests for this week. In 1971, President Nixon defaulted under the U.S. obligation to pay foreign central banks 1 ounce of gold in exchange for every $35 paper dollars. In truth, the dollar was no longer as good as gold. To maintain its value, the U.S. arranged with Saudi Arabia and OPEC to require that all oil exports be paid for in U.S. dollars, thus enabling the U.S. dollar to engage in what I believe very strongly was an immoral act of printing trillions of dollars of fraudulent money to fund America's endless wars and socialism. The gold price has risen, but only partly in line with dollar debasement. Chris Powell will explain how true price discovery for gold has been denied by suppressive central bank manipulation and why it should matter to you as well. Notwithstanding gold price suppression, Michael will explain why a serious breakout in the gold price is now underway, and he'll be explaining that to us momentarily. And for the first time in many years, the uranium price is on the rise and seems to be it actually has broken out. Michael's talked to us about that as well. That's why I had scheduled Amir Adnani to talk about uranium energy, but I was speaking with Amir a little earlier today, and noting the gold breakout, he suggested maybe he'd rather speak about Gold Mining Inc., which I think is an excellent idea because Gold Mining Inc. has, during the downturn, has assembled millions of ounces of gold from various properties. It's an options play on gold, and at some point, people are going to wake up to the enormous amount of gold that company has in the ground. And the options plays, you know, once you get past a certain level where those ounces in the ground become profitable, all of a sudden those kind of companies can rise very dramatically in price. And so I think I'm looking forward to hearing what Amir has to say in the second segment of today's show. But right now I'm happy to tell you that Michael Oliver is with me once again. It's OliverMSA.com, OliverMSA.com. Thanks for joining me again, Michael.
Hi, Jay. Always good to be back.
Always good to have you, and especially it's good to have you when times seem to be turning in our favor with a bit of wind at our backs for us gold bugs. This past weekend, you put out a missive on gold in an article headed 32 days and counting, meaning that in 32 days, I guess I'm not sure exactly what it meant. I took it to mean in 32 days from Saturday or from Sunday that we would reach a five-year high for gold. But in fact, I was talking to you off mic, and you were suggesting that, no, it's not 32 days from now. It's about, what, 18 days or something like that? Could you tell us how you've come to the conclusion that we're ready to start knocking on the door of a five-year high?
Well, if you look at a gold price chart, let's say a monthly bar chart, go back to the top of 2011, you'll see that since 2014, the high each year is gradually descending. The high in 2014 was just above 1390. Then we had highs in the 1370s in 2016. Then we had highs in the 1370-60 level in 2017 and 18. So very gradually declining line, almost flat, across going back 5 years, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Okay, now anybody can see that. And in fact, that's what the price charters are looking at. It's a big breakout if you get up there, and I say 1360 is enough to break it out. Well, you can wait for that if you want, but our momentum work, after the August low, which was down at 1161, we crossed 1200, we had our first breakout. Crossed 1240, it was December 7th, we had our second breakout. And our final breakout was crossing 1280 and later in December. So average price is 1240 on this upside here. Those were major momentum breakouts going back a couple of years in particular. That 1280 breakout, which is in December, took out the last thing we had in terms of resistance or a breakout level overcome. Now we're left only with price. So the price guys throughout the world, even those who don't like gold and never have gold or gold miners in their portfolio, are now getting phone calls, no doubt, from people, their subscribers, shareholders, and so forth, that how come we don't have any gold? It's the best performing thing out there for the last 3 to 6 months. You know, and they're waking up to it. It's been a sneak attack by gold.
Yeah.
The gold rally from August low of last year was, it was arm wrestling type of move. It wasn't vertical. It wasn't rapid. It was just gain ground, held ground, gain ground, held ground. And it's behaved very well. Like there's some big bidding under the market, very solid. It doesn't back off much. Now I think we're about to accelerate. Getting over 1300, right now we're 1310 on the spot futures contract, Fed gold. We're 3.8% away from what I think is the level that the price guys throughout the world will have to wake up and say, golly, you know, we either have to be in this or not be in it. It's time to have a committee meeting. And I think once that happens, once you get people who are non-gold people suddenly realize that it's the best performing thing out there versus the S&P, even versus T-bonds, which is the other alternative that most people look at when they exit the stock market, they're going to be forced into it. Now, that will widen, I think, the demand base for gold miners. I had a somewhat sarcastic analysis of the gold miners of the past few years as sort of a private club of gold bugs who sort of like play cards with each other. In this case, they trade back and forth amongst each other. It's a very small sector in terms of size, billions of dollars in assets, et cetera, compared to, let's say, technology or consumer discretionary and so forth. So some of that money fleeing the stock market, just a small portion of it says, hey, we got to be in the gold arena. And they can't buy gold, let's say, so they buy gold stocks. That would be a huge rush of money into what's a small market arena. And I think it would create dynamics that you haven't seen in a couple years. We still believe the gold miners will beat gold, hands down, in terms of percentage gain. Gold's the mama, and the gold miners are little dogs on a leash, but they rush forward and they rush backward. You know, like you said, they underperform and outperform. But going forward on the upside here in gold, I think the miners will be the place to be, probably the best place on the planet.
Michael, where is that five-year high for the bullion? What price are we looking at?
That would be the 1390-plus high that occurred in the 2014 high, but actually the line that's important is the one that comes across those highs and intersects now such that if you hit 1360, you're at the line, and believe me, they're not going to stop at it. I think they'll vault through that level, and you'll have gold in the 1400s rapidly. So, but the issue is the ambush effect that I think is about to occur, namely, no more incremental firm upside. Now we vault upward. So it wouldn't shock me in the next week or so that we get a $40 day here or there, you know what I mean? So suddenly where there's a grabbing sound, people grabbing for that market, simply because there's nothing else performing the same way. Find me a commodity that's behaving like gold.
Okay, so we're looking at mid-February sometime, thereabouts, Michael?
Well, no, I think it could happen any time. I just had made a bet on December 7th. We put out a ridiculous report that said in 50 trading days, not market calendar days, gold will be above the five-year highs, meaning take out the trend line that connects them, plus that highest high up there at 1390-plus. And I think that's likely to happen. And I think now we're in the 1300s. We should see some more rapid advance, not $5 days, but maybe we get a $30, $40 day in here, where the money flow suddenly pushes gold through that structure, the price chart structure, in a rapid way.
Yeah. As Doug Casey called it,
is over.
As Doug Casey called it, a Niagara Falls through a garden hose.
Something like that.
Michael, what about some of the other markets then? What about treasuries are looking strong now? It seems the market has gotten a bit weak, equity markets. So risk off going to treasury, maybe to gold too, though, perhaps.
Yep, no, I think it's the two. I think it's gold, which has not been jolting higher. But T-bonds, if you'll notice, we got bullish in December last year.
Yeah.
Bonds came up to 141, T-bond futures. And they shot up. We thought we were getting a low 150s. They stopped just below 149. But then when we had this sharp stock rally, bonds pulled back into the 144. So they gave back half their gains.
Mm-hmm.
Still positive in our view. But during that time, if you'll notice, the other alternative, gold, did not break down. It stalled. It stalled in a very tight little fist of ink between 1280 and 1300. So unlike the bonds, which had a sharp pullback, as those who panicked into bonds as an alternative sold out when the S&P rallied, they didn't sell their gold. Gold fell tightly, which I think is a good statement about the money flow into gold. But both of them can be viewed as alternatives to stocks for the time being. I don't think ultimately T-bonds will hold upside. I think we're going to have higher rates, but as the stocks break down sharply in those phases early in a bear market, you'll get these upward jolts in T-bonds, flight to safety again. Gold is the one that will persist opposite to stocks as the other alternative.
Well, we have seen at times in the past when risk has come out of confidence is lost in the system, money comes out of both stocks and bonds and goes into gold. It doesn't happen all that often, but when it does, it could be very dramatic. And just one with 30 seconds left here yet, soft commodities, you're still bullish on the agricultural commodities?
The place to be, aside from gold in the commodity arena, it's not so much the big name stuff like copper and oil, though they could get their act together again, too. They've had a big pullback, which we expected. It's the food commodities, the stuff that's basically priced out. It's blanched as much as it's going to be. They're not going to take it any lower. The issue is when it goes up. Speaking of things like sugar, cocoa, the grains, soybean oil, things that are mundane, stuff that comes out of the ground is been ground into it's bottomed and it's ready to participate in the upside. And I think that's where most of the commodity upside, broader outside of gold, that is, will be this coming year. Will be in the food commodities.
Yeah. And I know that you also, your work is showing uranium looking pretty strong, too.
No, I like the uranium sector. It's had a fresh breakout back in October. It's gained since then, and I think it's a major breakout. I think it's a big turning point for uranium, which also got bombed out in terms of the price levels it saw in the recent years.
Yeah, and again, I would just remind my listeners that this isn't Michael just talking, just talking from the seat of his pants. He's looking at his momentum work and his, this is what I appreciate, Michael, about your work, is it's not just, I can look at various things and say, well, this seems like it ought to do this and that, it seems like it ought to do that. But in fact, subjectively, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to try to figure out what's going to really happen. But in those numbers, your work has just been so, so good. I want to thank you again for spending time with us and helping us along here. I went out and took a bit of a position in GDX this week through some call options, and they seem to be working well. And I did it strictly on your confidence, on the confidence I have in your work, that we're very near a very rapid blowout in gold, perhaps. So thank you very much, Michael, and I hope we can talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Jay. Bye.
All right, folks, well, don't go away. We're going to be right back with Amir Adnani. He's with Gold Mining, Inc. We're going to talk to him about gold today, not uranium. He might put in a word or two about uranium, but Gold Mining Inc. is what we're going to talk to him here about right after the break, so don't go away.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdes Reward Project. In addition, Noble has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Noble is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia. Gold Mining Inc., ticker symbol GOLD on the TSX and GLDLF on the OTC, is the biggest bet for gold investors and legendary investors like Doug Casey, Rick Rule, and Marin Katusa, who put millions of dollars into backing the company, along with institutional investors. The insiders own over 20%. Gold Mining has strong cash and no debt. It's one of the top 1% of gold companies that has over 20 million ounces of gold resources. Visit goldmining.com.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have with me once again Amir Adnani. Amir is a real entrepreneur in the mining sector. He is the founder of Uranium Energy Corp, and he has been the president and CEO and the director of that company since its inception back in 2005. And he is also the founder and chairman of Gold Mining Inc. That's a company that we want to talk to him about today. Thanks for joining me again, Amir.
Hi, Jay. It's exciting to be connecting on a day where we're finally seeing gold above 1300.
Absolutely. And, we had built out and promoted the show today on the basis of your uranium story. And that also is looking very good now, as Michael just told us. His charts are looking very positive for uranium. But you and I were speaking a little earlier, and you sort of thought it might be a good idea to talk about gold mining today. And I agreed because your company is what I would call an optionality play. That is, when the gold price gets to a certain level where the projects start to look economic and become economic, then all of a sudden the market starts to really pay attention. Up until that point, they can sell very, very at very low prices, and I would suggest that your stock, which is around 90 cents Canadian, is quite a low price given the millions of ounces of gold that you have in the ground. I should tell our listeners that you trade in Toronto under the symbol GOLD, and it's GOLDF down here in the States. Can you comment a little bit on your business model? Just tell us a little bit about how you put this company together, what your philosophy is, and how you expect to profit from it.
Yeah, and before I do, just for anyone that was expecting to hear us talk about uranium, you and I just recently connected in Vancouver and taped an interview where we discussed uranium and UEC at length. So I encourage everyone to look that up on our website, and they can hear what Jay and I were discussing about uranium. But when we just go back to the business model...
Excuse me, Amir, just a minute. Amir, let me just also say that your speech there is also available. I don't know if you have it on your website, but we have it at miningstocks.com, the link to that, to your speech as well as our interview. So go ahead. I'm sorry for that, but I wanted people to know that your 10-minute talk is also available there, which I think is very, very good.
Perfect. Thank you for that. And that's good. So that's all fairly recent and good information there. As far as gold mining, our company here, and the model, I think this is...
Jay, something that listeners that are especially perhaps new to investing in the gold sector, you know, should or can hope hopefully understand, which is that, you know, there's more than one way to create value in the market for investors in a resource company. And not the, you know, the only way to do it isn't to just go build a mine and hope it all works. There are, again, variety of models, whether it's exploration, prospect generator, asset developer. And then there's the concept of being a consolidator, being an acquirer of resource stage projects, which requires an extended bear market. So I would argue that, first of all, we've seen this business model successfully executed in other commodities. The best example that comes to mind is Ross Beaty and his group Lumina Copper that did this with copper resources in the early 2000s, where they basically acquired copper projects pre-production but at a resource stage and held on to them, developed them a bit, never took them to production, and ultimately as copper prices recovered, they were able to get just gorgeous returns for their equity holders and exit everything. I think they were in it for about $100 million in acquisitions and exited with close to $1.5 billion or so in total exits. Now, so now you bring that same model to the gold sector, and we have not seen the price of gold above $1,400 for 6 years now. It's actually a bit depressing when you when you look at it. I mean, 6 years is a long time. And the sector over the last 6 years has been undergoing this period of underinvestment in exploration. Gold stocks have been just unloved and maybe even hated. And so this has created the perfect backdrop to be an acquirer. And so the model has been to be focused on projects that you can acquire that have been drilled out. So you have a resource, an independently verified resource. In countries and jurisdictions where there's existing mining regime and rule of law and infrastructure, and all of this sounds good, but guess what? When you're in a bear market and no one wants any project, you can have your best picks. You can pick whatever you want because it's like you're at an all-you-can-eat buffet and there isn't a big lineup for it. And so we've managed to put together a portfolio in five different countries in the Americas, all mining-friendly countries with good exploration upside, near infrastructure, and projects that are resource stage, where someone else has already come in and spent tens of millions of dollars in mobilizing exploration camps, doing drilling, doing all the hard work, and established resources. In some cases, these projects, historically, the prior owners had even established economic studies, a pre-feasibility study or preliminary economic assessment. So this is really a case, Jay, when you add it all up, the last time the gold price was over $1,400 an ounce, the combined companies that we managed to acquire had over $1 billion of, or almost $1 billion of either market cap or sell-side analysts that had published net asset valuations on them. Mm-hmm. We've acquired everything for around $80 million in stock. So these are stock-based acquisitions that we have made. So I'm really excited about this because obviously we could very well be set up in a way this year to see $1,400 gold again. And I think it's going to just really be exciting for a company like Gold Mining that is positioned so well. And you know, Jay, the key with a strategy like this is to have a very tight burn rate because this is almost like creating a dated call option on gold. With so much gold resources in the ground. And you and I both know the value of an option will be much greater if it can last longer. In this instance, it means low G&A and not incurring dilution. Jay, it's 2019. The last time Gold Mining raised money was 2016. It's sort of unheard of in the junior resource sector for a company to manage its finances and balances a balance sheet so well that it doesn't need to go to market. As of this month, we've even disclosed already that we have over $9 million of cash on hand, and the company's budgeted activities, which is minimum license requirements and G&A, and just the cost to basically maintain a portfolio in five different countries for the next year is expected to be $5 million. So this company is well-funded and can can really be that long-dated call option for gold with a resource portfolio right now that is 9.5 million ounces of M&I resources and about 11.7 million ounces of inferred resources.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. And you are, of course, you're in Canada, in the United States, in Alaska. You are also, I believe, you're in Brazil. You're in Peru, and I guess you're in Ecuador. Is that right?
You got them all. We're almost there. Let's recap: U.S., Canada, Colombia, Peru,
Colombia.
And Brazil. Yeah, not
Colombia.
Ecuador, Colombia.
Right. Yeah. Now, Amira, do you plan to do any advancement of these projects on your own this year, or what is your policy now? How would you expect to cash out? Let's say, I know you're not going to be in a hurry right now. You're waiting for higher gold prices and probably some people start knocking on your door. I can't imagine some of the major mining companies that are starving for reserves in the future wouldn't have their eyes on some of your larger projects at least. But what is your strategy for cashing out on this thing going forward? I know we're going to see higher share price as the price of gold rises, but are you looking at some point, do you have in your mind how you're going to exit, your exit strategy?
Well, first of all, I think if we look back to 2016, the only year over the last 6 years where we had a slightly better gold market, it's quite instructive as to what are two things that can happen. One thing that happened is that we saw very dominant performance in our equity J. As you know, we were the best performing gold stock in 2016. I think we were up about 400%. The GDX share was up about 180%. That mm-hmm. really speaks to the leverage that the company has to the gold price that you're speaking to. But we also saw that just because the gold price was stronger in 2016, it didn't mean that we had limited opportunities to make acquisitions. And so my point is to answer your question about plans, our plan still would be that if we end up in 2019 with a stronger gold market, and our shares are trading and performing better, and we find those relatively accretive acquisition mm-hmm. opportunities that add more value on a per share basis than the dilution effect, that mm-hmm. those are great deals for us to do. And as our cost of capital continues to fall, as the share price increases and the gold price increases, we could enhance the value of the existing portfolio by advancing these projects through PEAs or economic studies that can reflect updated numbers based on today's economic considerations to develop projects. Longer mm-hmm. term, I think the trend that we need to look at is the shortage and the depletion of gold resources and reserves for the gold industry.
Right.
The gold industry today is at a decade low when it comes to resources and reserves. Average discovery costs have increased from $30 an ounce to almost $100 an ounce. And you're seeing a lot of M&A in the sector. The big boys are doing M&A, whether you're, with Barrick and Randgold, with Goldcorp and Newmont. There was some rumors that the South African gold producers might be getting together with Anglo Gold. And so you're seeing signs that there could be consolidation ahead. We already have a number of institutional shareholders, but we also have companies like IAM Gold as shareholders of the company. We have long-standing shareholders like Doug Casey and Rick Rule and Marin Katusa from 2010, and then we have new institutional shareholders that have come on board over the last year. This all, I think, is a strong vote of confidence, Jay, that speaks to the fact that if you anticipate where things are going with a higher gold price, there probably will be more M&A, more consolidation, and we're seeing the early signs of that. I think broader M&A happens once the big boys start to put deals together, and the big boys have already been doing deals quietly while the gold price was below 1300, and that may potentially accelerate as the gold price continues a march towards 1400. The key is to be in the driver's seat, in my opinion, and the driver's seat is if you control resources in the ground, because that is what the industry needs more of, and that's the position that gold mining is in with our resource stage projects that we have.
Well, I think you make a point, a very good one, in terms of capital structure and having a solid shareholders who can withstand the tough times. That allowed you to build this company as you have. With just a minute left, Amir, can you comment on what some of your upcoming catalyst might be, so shareholders and investors can keep an eye on what's going on and the news that you put out over the next few weeks.
Yeah, so first of all, we've done a ton of work over the last almost year in bringing together a really exciting project in Canada called the Yellowknife Gold Project in Northwest Territories. This was a fantastic example of a bear market acquisition, a company and an asset that we bought out of bankruptcy, which is the effect of having a very low gold price over the last 6 years. There has just been these very distressed situations, and we've managed to really take advantage of that. And what happens is when you have to consolidate over 200,000 meters of diamond drilling, it takes a long time to be able to produce new resource reports. And so that's the work that has now culminated. And our upcoming catalyst will be a new 43-101 resource report. That's on an asset we already own. So that's great to know that resources will increase with existing projects that we already have. And additional project sort of progression with our Brazilian and Canadian asset that we'll be putting the resource report on. And keep an eye on uranium. We have a uranium joint venture totally unrelated to gold. So if you like a little bit of uranium, this is a company that's 100% focused on gold. But through one of our acquisitions, as you know, we inherited a uranium joint venture with France's Areva as our joint venture partner. Now they're called Orano. And that's something that we plan to spin out and sell into a rising uranium price environment, which we're also seeing happen with the uranium prices up 35% year over year and looking like they could also have a strong 2019. So you get that kind of extra uranium optionality on top of the very significant gold optionality.
Yeah, it's a very exciting. Any possibility of any work to be done on the uranium project, or is that just sitting there now waiting for higher prices?
I think we'll leave that to be done by the SpinCo or however way the project is monetized. I believe it's important that gold mining shareholders are in no way diluted or sort of have the capital that we have, you know, steered towards something that's unrelated to gold. Again, this was a project that we got lucky and inherited through one of our acquisitions in 2013. But we'll leave any work on the uranium project to be done as we monetize this asset or spin it out. That SpinCo can work that out.
All right, very good. We'll have to leave it go at that. Amir, thank you so much for spending time with us and updating us on a very exciting story, Gold Mining Inc. We'll look to talk to you again sometime about that company or your uranium company. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jay.
All right. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to be right back with Chris Powell of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. He's going to talk to us about the work of that committee, of GATA, and why the gold price. He's going to give us some evidence from his point of view, at least in terms of why he believes the gold price has been suppressed and what that might mean for you as an investor. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Chris Powell.
Triumph Gold holds a 100% interest in the district-scale Free Gold Mountain gold-copper project in Yukon, with a government-maintained road accessing their 200-square-kilometer property. The 2018 drill program has resulted in exciting discoveries to date, hitting the richest intersection ever in a porphyry system in Yukon. The company is well-funded and has a large institutional holding, including Goldcorp and Zijin Mining. Triumph trades on the TSX Venture under the symbol TIG and the OTC markets TIGCF. The website is triumphgoldcorp.com. Uranium Energy Corp., NYSE, American UEC, is America's emerging uranium producer. The company is 100% unhedged and has fully permitted and licensed processing plant and production-ready uranium assets in South Texas and Wyoming. With a rising uranium spot price, UEC is positioned to lead and supply to the U.S. uranium requirements ahead. Visit UraniumEnergy.com and on Twitter at Uranium Energy.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me, after quite a long period of time, we've had Chris Powell with us in the past, but I'm really pleased that he's with us again. It's been a number of years, I believe. He is a columnist for the Journal Inquirer, that's a daily newspaper in Manchester, Connecticut, where he has worked since graduating from high school, and I believe that's a few years ago. Chris and I are not that far apart in age, so 1967. I graduated in 1965, so anyway, there you have it. Chris is also Secretary-Treasurer of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, GATA for short. That's a nonprofit organization that aims to expose and oppose the manipulation of the gold market and related markets by central banks, and that's what we want to talk to Chris about today. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Oh, my pleasure, Jay.
It's really good to have you with us. I've known you now for quite a few years, you and Bill Murphy, the founders of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Maybe since you haven't been on with us for quite a while, for those that might not be familiar with GATA, I can't imagine that it would be a large percentage of our listeners, but if you could just give us a little background on how and why GATA was created.
We began back in January 99, Jay, really in response to Bill Murphy's commentaries at his internet site, La Metropole Cafe. He was trying to cover the gold and silver markets. He began to notice that they seemed to be manipulated, that there were smashes in the prices whenever certain key technical levels were reached. He originally attributed this to the major bullion banks that traded gold and the futures in New York. I bumped into his internet site and began reading his columns in late 1998, and I thought that there was a lot of evidence that he was right about the manipulation, but I thought he was missing something. I had some experience with antitrust law because of my newspaper work, and I wrote to him saying, look, it looks like you're onto something here, but if you're right, what is happening would seem to be against the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act and 50 state antitrust acts. And in that case, somebody ought to form a committee to hire an antitrust law firm to sue the bastards for triple damages under antitrust law. And if I told him if somebody wanted to form such a committee, I'd contribute $500. He thought it was a good idea. We formed the committee. Just through luck and happenstance, we were able to obtain an antitrust law firm to look into the issue for us. And the lawyers discovered that gold market rigging by the U.S. government has been perfectly legalized by the Gold Reserve Act of 1934, which established the Exchange Stabilization Fund. The lawyers told us that if the real party in interest in the rigging was not a bullion bank or bullion banks, but the U.S. government, then the market rigging would probably be legal and there was no way to pursue them under antitrust law. We continued to do research and it increasingly confirmed that the real party in interest was the U.S. government and allied governments, and that probably the best, most we could do was to expose the market rigging. That we couldn't get it enjoined by a court. We could very possibly obtain documents exposing it, which is what we have done. We just continue doing that. We've amassed many admissions from Western governments of their surreptitious involvement in the gold market for price manipulation purposes. We've got documents from the International Monetary Fund and the Federal Reserve, for example, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. I think they all show overwhelmingly that Western central banks continue to trade secretly in the physical gold and especially the gold futures markets for price control purposes. I think it's very easily confirmed. All you have to do is put a very specific critical question to any government agency that's involved in this, and you'll get the door slammed in your face. But there's lots of documents that we've compiled and posted on our internet site. We're glad to share with everybody. I think they establish beyond a doubt that governments are secretly trading in the gold market for price control purposes, just as they were trading openly in the gold market for control purposes during the years of the London Gold Pool in the 1960s. Mm-hmm.
Right, for sure. Well, Chris, is it directly the Fed, the government? Well, the Fed isn't the government, of course, it's quasi-government, but is it the government, the Treasury, or is it the big major banks that are connected to the government that are acting on behalf of the government in the futures market?
The investigation certainly comes out of the Treasury Department. Treasury Department controls the Exchange Stabilization Fund, which is the agency that is explicitly authorized not only to trade in the gold market, but the Exchange Stabilization Fund is explicitly authorized by U.S. law to trade secretly in any market in the world for any purpose that it mm-hmm. might have. This is, you know, quite astounding to me. But if you look up the Exchange Stabilization Fund page on the Treasury Department's internet site, you can see this is confirmed. So I think it starts with the Treasury Department, and it goes back decades as a matter of executing U.S. government policy, which is to maintain the dollar as the world reserve currency, which means pushing gold out of the world financial system. And there's, you know, many records on the internet site of the historian of the U.S. Treasury Department showing that U.S. policy for decades has been to suppress the gold price and push it out of the world financial system and prevent other countries from using anything but the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. So I think it originates in this longstanding U.S. policy. It's executed mainly at the direction of the Treasury Department, but the Fed executes Treasury trades. Other U.S. trades are likely executed through the Bank for International Settlements in Basel's Switzerland. The BIS is the major gold broker for most central banks. They are deeply involved in trading gold surreptitiously for their central bank clients. Every month, the BIS posts its monthly statement of account, which shows changes in its gold position, and you know, which represents trading for its clients. If you ask, as Gatta has asked the BIS, what are you doing in the gold market and for whom and what are you trying to achieve there, the BIS will cordially tell you, drop dead. We don't talk about this stuff. You can go try to ask some individual central bank about it, and of course they won't talk about it either. But mm-hmm. this is longstanding Western central bank policy that goes back to the London Gold Pool in the 60s. They used to control the gold price in the open. It cost them a lot of gold reserves that they had to disord from their stockpiles. Then in the 70s, they realized they could rig the gold market much more efficiently and much more cheaply if they did it with futures in a futures market. And and that's really what has happened since the 1970s, that the Western central banks have underwritten the monetary metals futures markets and underwritten the immense shorting of gold and silver futures by their agent bullion banks. And the gold price, as a result, has not kept up with inflation for the last half century, largely because central banks, through the futures markets, have underwritten this creation of a vast imaginary supply of gold. The estimates of this are that there's only 1 ounce of gold now, supporting as many as 100 ounces of paper gold that are trading in the futures markets for price suppression purposes. If you ever want an estimate of what the gold price should be You can look at that ratio between paper gold and real metal. If people who wanted gold insisted on taking delivery of the real metal, or at least vaulting it outside the banking system, there'd be a short position of like 100 to 1 that couldn't be covered.
My goodness. So it's hard to say where the price would go then in that case. It seems to me, Chris, I don't know if it was some government officials that GATA confronted, but it seems to me, I recall, that, you know, for propaganda purposes, of course, the officials said, well, we don't suppress the gold price, but we would have the legal right to do so. So I guess he's probably right.
The first lawsuit we brought against the Fed and the Treasury and the bullion banks and the BIS was in U.S. District Court in Boston in 2001. Uh-huh. There was one hearing in the case. I attended it. Our lawyer, Reg Howe, was suing the BIS because it was expropriating the shares he owned in the BIS. The BIS then did have some outstanding shares in private hands and was trying to expropriate them. Reg was arguing that the BIS wasn't paying a fair price because the BIS owned a lot of gold and was helping to suppress the price of gold and thereby undervaluing its own shares. I went to that hearing. There were a lot of lawyers there for the other side, including an assistant U.S. attorney, and the assistant U.S. attorney was moving for something called summary judgment, which is the dismissal of a case on the grounds that even if everything alleged by the plaintiff is true, there is no remedy at law. Mm-hmm. And the assistant U.S. attorney was arguing there was no remedy at law here because the Gold Reserve Act of 1934, as amended in the 1970s, gave the power to the U.S. government to rig the gold market exactly as our lawsuit had complained of. Now, that is the U.S. government's position, that mm-hmm. without admitting that it was doing what we charged it with, the U.S. government claimed the power to do what God had charged it with doing. Now, that's pretty good evidence, I think.
I think so. No question about it. So the reason is to, as I believe it is, Chris, let me know if you think it's really to convince the people that the dollar is as good as gold. It doesn't need to have gold backing. And then they can create endless trillions of dollars out of thin air and sort of this sort of sleight of hand convince everybody that they're dealing with something that's as good as gold.
Yeah, it's not just that. That's certainly the big part of it. It's to really neuter the primary competitor to the dollar is the world reserve currency by devaluing the competitor and masking the inflation that has been created through the U.S. dollar supply. But it's broader than that. It's also a scheme to protect not only the dollar, but to protect the value, the price of U.S. government bonds and other Western government mm-hmm. bonds, and to control interest rates. And it's also a scheme to suppress commodity prices generally, to suppress the prices that would show up most blatantly in the consumer price index that would get attention in the news media and show up more in consumer prices. So it's really a part of a bigger scheme that the British economist Peter Warburton wrote about in an essay in 2001, which is on our internet site. Warburton speculated that it would really take only, I think he said, $100 or $200 billion for the Western central banks to control all the commodity markets through futures trading. And if they did so, they could maintain the value of their currencies. They could push all the inflation they were creating into financial assets. They could keep commodity prices down and prevent commodity possession from competing with government currencies. It's part of a much bigger scheme. I see this as the continuation of the ancient struggle between the producing and the financial classes. There's people who work for a living and create things and extract products of value from the earth, and then there's people who manipulate the currency and financial assets in order to gain control of real things, and that latter group has been winning for a long time.
Well, that's you might call them thieves, I would guess, and the idea is that it's certainly, well, you know, going back to 1971 when Nixon detached gold from the dollar internationally, that was done, as I understand it, Chris, to allow the United States to be able to finance, that is, the government, to be able to finance a war in Vietnam and increase its policies of socialism under Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon without telling the American people they were going to have to pay for it. And now we see exactly what you're talking about, government and the banking system, the financial sector becoming extremely large. The middle class, the people, when I grew up in Ohio, you know, those people are having a tough time of it back in the Midwest where they used to produce the things, farmers, the miners, the manufacturers, the farmers, I would say maybe not so much the inventors, but at least those people that are producing real things that we all need. It is really an immoral it is really an immorality, in my view, that you can create money out of nothing. Essentially, it's theft, isn't it? Can you see it any other way?
Yeah, it is, but it's legal theft.
It's legal theft.
The thugs have
written the laws.
Financial interests allied with the government can do this. The people who run the central banks and the investment banks allied with them they're in control. If they control the currency markets, they control the valuation of all capital, labor, goods, and services in the world. And there's nothing else. If you can control the currency markets, you control the world. You control prices. There's a very interesting transcript of a meeting in Secretary of State Henry Kissinger's office back in 1974. He's meeting with his deputy, a guy who was from Connecticut, whose name I can't quite think of right now, Kissinger's deputy is telling him why the United States must persuade its European allies not to remonetize gold, not to increasingly use gold as part of the world financial system, because the Europeans now, Kissinger is told, now have more gold than the United States. And collectively, they have more gold than the United States. And Kissinger is told by his deputy that whichever power has the greatest amount of gold can revalue that gold from time to time. And in revaluing gold, can change the valuations of all currencies in the world. And whoever can control the valuations of all currencies in the world is running the world. Right then in 1974, the United States was doing that, but Kissinger was told that the Europeans now had the power to overturn the dollar and return the world to gold or something else and to seize control of the currency markets from the United States, and that the United States had to prevent that. And when Kissinger understood that, he told his deputy, well, if they cross us on this one, we'll smash them.
Okay, Chris, with 3 minutes left, then let me ask you this. China, Russia, they're accumulating huge amounts of gold. China especially, not just the central banks in China, but the population as a whole. They've been very much encouraging massive importation of gold. What do you think they're up to? China, Russia, Iran, you might throw in there. The adversarial nations of the United States.
Yeah, the United States has been throwing its weight around in a very bullying way increasingly over the last few years. It's weaponized the dollar with sanctions. It certainly seems as if some powerful nations and some small ones are preparing to get out from under control by the U.S. dollar. Now, I don't think any country, including the Russians or the Chinese, wants to return to a gold standard, but I think they realize that they have the power to devalue the dollar effectively and to gain strength for themselves through gold, because gold is enormously undervalued because of the paper gold short position floating around the world today. They want to get out from under the U.S. dollar imperialism, and I think they're planning to do that. I always cite a speech given by Oleg Mazeyskov, who was deputy chairman of the Russian Central Bank. He gave a speech in Moscow in 2004 to the summer meeting of the London Bullion Market Association, meeting at the Kempinski Hotel in Moscow. The only words of English that the deputy chairman of the Bank of Russia spoke were Gold Antitrust Action Committee. That was pretty interesting because, to the best of our knowledge, in 2004, we'd never had any contact with anybody in Russia. Turned out the Bank of Russia was watching us very carefully. And the effect of that speech by Mazeyskov was the Russians telling the London bullion bankers that Russia was now on to them. It knew what was going on with gold leasing to suppress the gold price and keep commodity prices down. And very soon after that, President Putin ordered the Bank of Russia to start obtaining gold on all markets in the world. So I think we alerted to the Russians, at least, to the gold price suppression scheme. We may have alerted the Chinese.
All right. Well, Chris, we're just basically out of time here. I guess for our listeners then, and for everybody, for citizens as a whole, if you find something that's extremely undervalued, you might think about acquiring some of it.
Well, I don't know what the schedule of the central banks around the world is. I am very confident they will revalue gold upward at some point. I'm not so confident I will live to see the day. I hope I do. But maybe if you're under 50 or so, it's a pretty good bet.
Well, it's all in God's hands as far as I can tell. I don't know of any politician that has complete control. Thank you so much for the time, Chris, and for updating us on this. And the site where people can go to, GATA.org, is it?
Yeah, that's right, GATA.org. We run a little daily newsletter there that you can subscribe to if you want to. And, of course, we're always glad to get contributions.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chris, for your time and sharing your thoughts with us today. We'll look to do it
Thank
again
you,
sometime
Jay.
Soon. All right. Well, folks, so that is all the time we have for this week. Next week, John Rubino will be with me. And also I'm going to have a member of management of Dynacert will be with me to talk about that company's progress. They are actually making some progress now. And so I think you'll want to hear what is said about that next week. Michael Oliver should be with us as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Often referred to as one of the best teams in junior gold exploration, having discovered a 5 million ounce gold mine and sold a second company amidst discovery, the management behind Orin Resources now has a world-class exploration portfolio within Canada and Peru. Projects that give the company one of the largest direct pipelines for major discoveries globally, with one of the deepest technical teams to explore them. Entering into its third year of aggressive pursuit, Orin is expecting results from two of their major projects throughout the rest of this year. For the latest, head to orinresources.com and subscribe.